outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
So, Blue Sheep Media, huh?
Blue Sheep Media. We finally got a logo to lock down.
Yeah, you were here a couple of times. This is Kyle Rice, by the way. I'm Wayne Jacobson. This is The God Journey. Kyle's been with us before and joined us again today. But you're now the what of Blue Sheep Media? You're something.
I would say the co-founder of Blue Sheep Media. My wife is the brains and the hands of Blue Sheep Media. And currently with my teaching position and coaching, I'm more of just a figurehead at the moment for the most part.
And where does the term blue sheep come in?
So
I've never heard this before.
Yeah, so it was actually a really interesting conversation that came up. My wife was actually talking with her sister-in-law, and her sister-in-law made the comment that Jess is a blue sheep. And Jess was like, well, what are you talking about? What do you mean by a blue sheep? And then, so we did a little bit of research on it, and I guess it's actually
not quite a black sheep.
A black sheep.
We all know what a black sheep is, and we all know
correct.
What, yeah. So what's a blue sheep?
So a white sheep is a sheep that goes around along with the crowd. It follows everybody. It's part of the crowd, and it goes along with what everybody says. Then there's the black sheep that's the intentional rebel that is intentionally going against the grain and is owning that genre or that title. And then a blue sheep is somebody who doesn't quite fit in with the white sheep, but they're authentically owning the fact that they're a little different, a little out there, a little on the edge, but they're staying true to who they are. And come to find out, it actually has its origins in some Scottish terms, which was pretty interesting. But Jess and I loved the idea because this whole project seems very a little bit out there, a little bit on the edge, a little bit different, but we're trying to stay as true to who we are as possible.
Yeah, so not into the whole conformity world, but not into the rebellion world either. I like that contrast. What I don't like, since we're doing a book about, you know, having safe environments for conversations about race and gender and all kinds of things like that, is the white sheep is the good guy, the black sheep is the bad guy. That's part of that racial stuff in our language that we're completely oblivious to sometimes, that if you're our African-American brothers and sisters are going, yep, here we go again. The black sheep is the bad guy. Mm. The white sheep are the good guys. And, I understand why that gets tiresome, because it's been in our vernacular forever and probably didn't have a racial beginning, but it's part of that still white associated with good, purity, light, and black with darkness, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, makes it tough to talk about. So I'm glad we're blue sheep. Neither one of those two.
We are blue sheep. And it's so interesting, you know, even as you bring that up, because before, especially coming from a rancher's perspective, that wouldn't even be a consideration that I had. But as I've read through the conversations that we've had with Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation, and just some of the stories that Arnita brings up, it's like, man, you don't even think about something like that, because from a rancher's perspective, the origin of the black sheep versus the white sheep is a lot of the sheep's wool was white. And then they would actually put a black sheep in the herd. And that's how they would be able to track the herd numbers and see how the animals and how their herd was actually doing.
Wow.
And so it was very interesting. But then as that term has developed, all of a sudden you're like, man, yeah, that does have connotations in today's society that you'd never even consider if you were coming from a white privileged perspective.
Yeah.
Or a Caucasian perspective.
Yeah. It's just a lot of things like that in the language that we don't always pick up on, but interesting. So we've got this publishing company. You've got this new publishing company, you and your wife. Mm-hmm. I helped you kind of get it going for the purpose of publishing The City.
Mm-hmm.
And then The City went away for the time being. And then we just moved up the book that we've been talking about doing in November anyway, which was A Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation. And, man, we're just getting all that done. We got book cover done. We've got endorsements coming in from all over the place. And I had this conversation with someone the other day, though. They said, you know, it felt like God was leading them a certain direction, had been leading them this direction for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now it didn't look like the direction they thought God was leading them to, that it was could even possibly happen. And they were kind of confused by that. Why would God give me this promise? Why does he want me to walk this way? And one of the illustrations I use is I said, you know what? I don't think I would have started a new publishing company or helped you guys start one to publish a Language of Healing. I just don't think I would.
Yeah.
I think that's something we could have managed through Livestream just fine and blah, blah, blah. But the city I thought would definitely be a problem in terms of its size and scope. And so mm-hmm. we might have to go that way with that book. But so why we thought we were doing what we were doing didn't turn out to be why we were doing it at all. But that got us to prepare something that we need now for something else. And I'm really glad that we have this thing and we didn't do this through Livestream, because as we get these endorsements back in from entertainment people, from some of the top constitutional scholars in the nation, from the president of Fuller Theological Seminary, and all of them are saying this is a must-read book, given the climate of the nation that we're in. And I don't know how big this book would be. I'd be thrilled if we sold 20, 30,000, but I have no idea. But I'm so grateful that, again, I wouldn't have done this if the city hadn't have been the reason that we were headed that way. And I love the way God knows that we don't get everything right. So I'm gonna nudge you away, and because you don't see everything you need to see, it's gonna look like what I'm leading you toward wasn't what you thought it was for, but it is for something else. And I love that about God. I love that about this journey, the adventure of going, well, gee, I thought that was that, but evidently it isn't.
And I think that's the man. I can definitely appreciate that person's angst when they were looking at something saying, well, I felt like this is what God told me I was supposed to do, and now it looks completely different. But I agree with you, just the adventure of that, of following those nudges in the day-to-day process. And you were actually one of the first people that really introduced me to a conversational relationship with God that was more in the day-to-day and following those nudges in the day-to-day versus trying to look for that long term, like, okay, God, I don't want you to give me step one or two. I want you to give me not only the entire picture, but the end result as well. And that was one of the conversations that you and I really began having as in the earlier parts of our relationship that has really been a significant influence and impact on my life. Now, granted, I'm definitely haven't got it mastered by any means, but
nor do
but yeah,
I.
That you know, just be it. And that's the fun part is you. I mean, you've been on this road for, I mean, 60 years. Would you say 40 years?
Closer to 50, probably. Yeah.
Okay.
50.
And I'd say I'm probably at about 15 years. And for us both to be sitting here looking at this and being like, "Wow, neither one of us have this mastered," but there's a lot of joy in that. To not have to worry about necessarily trying to manufacture an end result, but being able to follow those nudges, just like this publishing company. And I mean, when you first messaged me about starting a publishing company, it's like, okay, like that is never
been my lifelong dream.
Yeah, exactly. That was, I mean, it couldn't have been more left field than I could have ever possibly imagined. And yet that's the joy of this, is not being in a place where I have to hold on, or we have to hold on so tight to the original vision of what we thought this was going to be, to where we don't allow the creative drive of the Savior and the Creator that we get to follow to have some flexibility to do things that we would have never imagined. And yet, man, it's a joy to get to be a part of this.
Yeah, when you said it was fun to be able to walk this way. The other thing I thought is it has less failure in it too. Because I think this is the way we get into the human effort thing. We get a desire in our heart, and then we kind of get some vision as to, well, this would look great if this would look this way. And then we kind of put God's name to that vision, and then we spend 2 or 3 months putting together the action plan to get us from where we are to that thing. And then there's the pure frustration of trying to work out our own agenda without God's power and direction and insight. And what I love about this journey is, man, I can head off on a nudge that I think God's leading it this way, and then get partway down the road going, oh, but that wasn't the end result he wanted. He pushed right a little bit. There's something he's got going over here toward my right. And it leads to a lot less frustration about things are not happening the way I thought God told me to, as things just unfold. And as we follow those nudges, things unfold in a glorious way. Well, welcome back after our commercial break. Thanks for staying with us. We never really have a commercial break, but we've had all kinds of technical issues trying to do this by Skype, and FaceTime gave us a nightmare of a problem. So Apple kind of get working on that. And now we're back trying it again, and hopefully everything's configured right.
I guess hopefully we got this sorted out.
I guess the big question is, when are you guys moving to California so we can do this in the studio?
So if you ask my wife that, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Wow.
Tomorrow. So just to give you a heads up on that. Yep.
They say it's better having babies out here than having them in Wyoming. So I don't know if that counts.
Oh, really?
I'm kidding.
Oh, really? You know, I might have to challenge that, but, you know, I don't think she would, though. I don't think she would.
No.
I think she'd be pretty excited about that.
Yeah. So welcome back. We'll pick up where we were just talking about the whole idea of having that, letting God's will unfold in our life rather than getting a goal and then making a plan and then trying to let human effort take us to the goal line.
The frustration of it, and yet there's all the, like, everything in the mainstream self-help world would say, well, you need to have a plan, you need to be intentional, you need to have 5 easy steps on how you're going to get there, you need to have an accountability partner that's going to help you achieve those goals. I feel like that's been adapted to a church mentality as well. To the spiritual journey.
It has. And to people's frustration and failure, because mm-hmm. those things just don't work that way. God, that's not the way God works. We don't figure out the goal we want and then we're going to get there. And we, not that we can't figure out a goal and not that we can't through human effort get there, but to get there with the breath of the Spirit and the fullness of his life, which is the thing we always seem to leave out. Religion does want to put it in our hands. It does want to give us, if you'll just do A, God will have to do B. And we teach that. It doesn't work. And then when it doesn't work, we blame the person. Well, you didn't do A right, or you didn't do A enough, or you didn't do A hard enough, or you didn't, you know. And I have found great joy in this journey by being able to live in that unfolding reality of who God is. And when God nudges my heart a direction, I don't mind going down that direction. And if I get partway down there and then it's clear that, boy, this is not going where I thought it was going. This is going somewhere else. Or this got me this far, but now I think of it in terms of mountains. So if I'm going to go toward that mountain over there, I'm going to head that way. When I get partway there and I might reach, you know, an ocean or something that's impossible, then I realize, okay, so the mountain wasn't the goal, but it got me here. And then maybe it's a different mountain over there that becomes the orientation point. And I do think that's how God mostly leads us. And the people I see frustrated, I have young people all the time. They've got a plan to plant a church. They've got a plan to do this in ministry. They've got a plan to do that. And I just sit there going, you know, this is probably not going to work. This sounds more like you than God. And it's hard for them to see because it's all the stuff they think God has shown them, taught them, told them. But they're still implementing a plan. They're not following that windblown breath of the Spirit that God's invited us to follow.
What about the people that start out on that windblown space that genuinely are feeling a nudge from God? They genuinely feel that, and there's the breath of the heart of God is in it, and they want to pursue it, and then they start down the road. What are some good road signs for them, or landmarks, or ways to begin to recognize that, oh, well, maybe I have gone off on my own plan, or maybe now, yes, I was originally following that nudge, but then I grabbed control of it and took off with it. And now the Spirit's nowhere to be found. And I'm left standing in the wilderness wondering what happens.
Well, he's still there, still waiting for us to lean back in. I've joked about, I wish the Holy Spirit, when he wants me to take this fork in the road and I don't take it, I wish he would stay there. Because then I would get down the road a little while and go, whoa, I feel quite alone here. But he doesn't. Do you want to go that way? I'm going to come with you. So he's still there. But I think we have to realize that one, our tendency as humanity is to always take control, because we like having this illusion of control that I can determine the outcome. We really don't want to be in that space that says, okay, if God doesn't come through here, then what we're trying to do isn't going to happen. I think that's why we get a lot of religion in our training, spiritual training, is because that's stuff we can control. I can control how many minutes a day I read the Bible, how many minutes a day I pray, if I go to this meeting, if I have an accountability. I can measure all that, and I can do it. Now, it doesn't matter if it's not effective. It doesn't matter. It doesn't lead me to a relationship with God. I'm doing my part. And so if God's not doing his part, that's his problem. And I think we just love things we can control. I mean, that's Israel's history, isn't it? I mean, there's moments where they really start with this breath of God's leading. And then, oh, thank you. We've got it from here. And they forget him. And then they start trusting in idols and other things. And I think we do that all the time. I think some of the maybe the signs that we're doing that is when we feel like we're in control. When we feel like, when we feel frustrated that things are not unfolding the way we thought they should, when we're saying things to God like, man, after all I've done for you, it seems like you could do this for me. Those would all be great signs to say, I think I may still even be pursuing God's objective, but now I'm pursuing his objective in my own strength.
Yeah.
There's no one on this journey that hasn't done that 100 times. I've done it. I've done it often in my path where you look at going, okay, I think that's what God wants. Great, I'm on it. And putting all my best wisdom and energy and effort towards it. And then you realize, man, the breath of the Spirit is not here now. Now it's got more of Wayne's sweat in it than it does God's breath. And that's always a good sign for me to just pause a minute and go, hold it. What am I doing here? But we love that illusion of control. It's you know, the brother we talked about on the blog that's wife was dying and there's got to be a way to pray that guarantees healing. And that's all coming back to our control again. And we can quote a few scriptures, you know, if you don't doubt in your heart, but believe, then God will do. And then we think, well, faith's just the way we manipulate God to get the outcomes that will make us happy. And it keeps us from being an adventurer that's saying, okay, God, this is what I hope for, this is what I'm praying for. What are you doing? How do I follow you? And a lot of that is circumstantial, isn't it? I'm praying for something that isn't happening. Yeah. That makes me step back a little bit and go, okay, maybe this isn't what God has in mind.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, praying harder and, you know, putting more effort into it. And that's the things I've done in the past to my utter exhaustion and frustration. And now I'm just open up and say, okay, that's not working. Now, there may be time God's saying, Wayne, it will persevere. And then I'm all in. If you want me to persevere, I'm going to persevere. But I'm not going to persevere in my own stubbornness because I want the objective so bad. And I can't admit that I've signed God's name to my desire because I think I do that a lot, have done a lot.
Yeah. And I, you know, being a part of this publishing company and other things that God has taken both when I was a single person, but then now in my married life with Jess, navigating that and getting to enjoy to see God unfolding different things, you know, like our whole story, even coming out to Wyoming has God's fingerprints very much in that regard of, well, this is what we originally came out here for. And now it doesn't look like that at all. And yet God was still building some beautiful things out of that. And yet one of the things that you talked about, and it still sets me off a little bit, that I still wrestle with a lot.
Cool.
Is navigating that in regards to the trust of finances. You know, like I think I've started to rest a little bit more in, okay, Lord, as far as like pursuing the dreams that you've created me for and pursuing some of the skills and passions that you've placed in my life, like that's those things I've really been able to kind of let go of and be able to rest and enjoy and walk in faith and trust with him in that. But then just this last week, there was a situation that came up that threatened a potential financial means that was providing for my family. And then all of a sudden I'm panicking, like full on panic, like, Lord, what's going to happen here? Like, did I completely miss you? Like, I felt like I was following your spirit here. I felt like your wind was here very much so. But now all of a sudden that's being threatened and I'm panicking because I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to my family financially specifically? And really learning to trust in God to provide both finances and other things that we need in our life. And that's an area that I still really wrestle with. Cause I remember you talking about how you said, well, you know, I'm going to just trust God. And if he doesn't show up and he doesn't provide, then I'll go and find a job that will pay the bills. And now you're what, 25, 30 years later. And you've been walking in that journey for a long time. I don't know. I guess I just there's that's a part of my world, my reality that I'm still wrestling with and learning how to trust him in that and learning how to walk in that freedom of spirit in. You know, and I guess I've kind of seen, I've been on the missionary side of it and worked in the church world where I'm living on support and just watching these people, even myself included, manipulating people or begging people because, you know, I feel like this is where God wants me to go, but I'm living on support. And so I need you to come through financially for me. And, you know, sometimes he did. And then other times I felt like I was out on a limb. And then I felt really yucky because I felt like I was just begging. I was just a street vendor begging for money or trying to manipulate somebody to give me money. And that was tough. Yeah. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
And on the other side of that, you've got people who, I mean, who of us hasn't given money to somebody, even though we didn't really support what they were doing and we didn't feel good about it, but we felt bad for them and we felt like guilty if we didn't give. And I've been in those missions training things where they train people how to get support and how to work the phones and how to, oh my gosh, I have never done that myself. So, and just by my own obstinance, I think more than anything else. I think what we have to know somewhere, the clarity of scripture is that God is our provider. I said that when I was a pastor and drawing a salary, God's my provider. And then when the salary went away, you found out that no, he really wasn't. The board was. And we didn't raise support, but boy, that was coming through the fruitfulness of the ministry and the board having given me a salary. And then I found out, no, I don't trust him for my support at all. I don't. And then the challenge is, so what are you going to do about it? Are you going to raise support from other people? I know a lot of missions groups, the people do this. I speak at those places where people have gotten there because of support. I'm not entirely against it. There's a yuck factor in it for me, for my doing it. And there's a yuck factor. I mean, Sarah and I are getting better at supporting what we really support and being able to say, you know what, doesn't seem like ours right now, even though it's somebody we deeply love. And there's so much about the Christian journey where people are manipulated to thinking that their dream is God's wish and they need to be committed to it and do whatever they have to and raise support. And even if they, you know, make people feel bad and not intentionally, but just exploit their friends to get the money they need. That's just turned me off from both sides of it. So I've never done it, but I have been one into the space of God saying, trust me, I'll take care of you. Now, the proof of that is that he actually takes care of me. I've shared this repeatedly with people because I think people who are creative, whether that's music, art, writing, ministry, particularly outside the box kind of thing, the creative element is tricky to finance. Everybody who's a musician would love to be a full-time musician and, you know, travel on tour and do concerts and make all kinds of money and sell all kinds of downloads. And I mean, that's every song person, singer's dream. And every writer's dream is to have a best-selling book. But even a best-selling book does not provide an income. People don't realize that. Now, a 24 million seller book, that provides an awful lot. But a best-selling book's 30,000 books. And that nets the author maybe 8 months worth of income, but not more than that. And that's a lifetime sale of the book. So it's not something but every creative person I know wants to live off their craft. Mm. And it's a feast or famine kind of reality. There's a small, just like the acting industry, a small percentage make a ridiculous amount of money. And the greater percentage can't even make a full-time job out of it because there just isn't enough return. And so it's tricky to say, okay, is God leading me to this, not leading me to that? I think the one thing we can all trust is God will be your provider. He will. Yeah. He has promised that Jesus, Matthew 6, the birds of the air, the flowers of the air, God takes care of them. That doesn't mean God takes care of me doing whatever I want. Yeah. Paul also said, you know, if you don't work, you don't eat. There's people now just freeloading off the body. I trust Jesus for my whatever. And then they're not working. And he said, you can't feed those people. And I don't know how you measure that in terms of compassion and love. I just go, he's talking. And I don't think he's saying you can't help somebody who's in need. But the will not to work, the idea that I'm going to be creative. And honestly, I think part of the problem there are people I know that want to be full-time, raise the support. They don't have enough to do full-time. So then they've got to make up stuff to keep people busy. I think I even did that as a pastor sometimes. We, you know, things would kind of lull and don't feel like I'm really earning my money here. So I'm going to start a class and we'll have a class. And then we're just adding to people's workload because I want to find some reason for being in what I do. So the whole idea of learning, and I think that's why it's a learning curve. It's really a learning curve saying, okay, God, I want to trust you with this. So if this job goes away, I know you have something for me. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I know you have something for me. And maybe this publishing company opens doors. Maybe it's another job comes up. Maybe there's people that just say, hey, we love what you're doing and we'll help you do it. We don't know what that is, but when we let God do it, then he'll make it clear. And my deal always with Sarah was, if we can't make it, because we were, quote unquote, living by faith, a term I hated because to me, living by faith was always living by begging off your friends.
Yeah.
And because I was almost obstinate with God, I'm not going to help you. If you're going to provide for me, you're going to do it without my help. Because I would rather get a real job. I'd rather go to work, get a paycheck, come home, and know my family's cared for than do this high wire dance every month. Are we going to have enough to pay our bill? And so my deal with Sarah was, we ever get the end of the month and can't pay off everything that we didn't have at the start of the month. And we carried a mortgage. That was it. We had no credit card debt. We had nothing. So the first time we've got to drip into our savings to pay the house bill is the time I'm going to get a real job. I want you to know I've got your back. And that's how God taught us, because every month he kept providing. I remember Sarah coming in one day saying, we need $1,000 by the end of the day, be in a real job. And I'm, and this is about 9-10 months into this little experiment of ours. I'm like, okay. And when she walked out, I didn't get down on my knees and beg God for $1,000. I just thought, wow, I wonder where I'd start looking for work tomorrow. Because I really thought that's probably where we are.
Yeah.
And that she comes back after going to the post office and says, we got a check for $1,000 in the mail today. Oh, boy. See, that's how God wins into trust. It's just, okay, now we'll see what he does. I'm going to live in it. And through that, he's just won my trust. I don't even have a hang up about him providing financially. And that was even before the shack. That was way before when we would just live month to month. But it was always like, I know it'll be there. It just is. God's just faithful. But I always told him, I said, you know, when you're done with this and you want me to get a real job, let me know. Don't drive me into bankruptcy. Let me know. Man, was, and I still have the same deal with Sarah. If we don't have enough, I'm getting a real job. And now you're just going to retire and go on Social Security. But but I don't think that's something people just create that belief out of their own head and heart and mind. I think God leads, they respond, they see God provide, that encourages them to take another step, and those things just unfold.
And I think that's part of just the ebb and flow of relationship, that there's areas of our relationship that we have more experience just walking through life with, and we trust him on a deeper level or in that regard, and yet there's other areas of our life that's still that growing space that we don't have as much experience, or it's something that we have a greater level of freer surrounding. Yeah. You know, as I'm hearing you talking, it just brings me back to the perception of having control over it. Because I mean, it would have been probably more perceivably easy to go out and get a real job, because then you perceivably have more control over that financial situation.
Yeah.
And yet I think of even the guys group that you and I were a part of and some of the conversations that we had. And I mean, those guys all, there wasn't a single person in that conversation that hadn't experienced significant financial hardship at some point in their life.
Which is true of most people, right?
Yeah.
I remember when we had go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, when we had this lawsuit over the shack at one point, and the lawsuit was set up in such a nature that if the other side would have won, it would have bankrupted me. I mean, it was not just, we want to steal the book. It's, we want to take everything you own and my house, my whatever Sarah and I have gathered over the years. And that was scary. I'm like going, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's what this is about. And in the midst of all that, there was this thing where God just said, hey, listen, if you and Sarah were together in a single wide trailer somewhere, and I was still with you, would you be okay? And I went, yeah, I would be. So I think part of that following Jesus, because even Jesus said, you know, if you have food and clothing, therewith be content. This is not, you know, follow your dreams and God will make you wealthy and relaxed and comforted and all that stuff. No, following him and living by what he provides means, man, I may be going through, and there have been seasons of our lives where Sarah and I have cut back significantly to fit inside the way God was providing for us.
Yeah.
And we felt like it was his direction. It wasn't just panic. It was, okay, this is what you're providing and you want us to make these changes. Because it's a holistic following him. It's not just about money or healing or, you know, all those things that we seek God and get wisdom about and try and make happen. It's a holistic kind of, okay, I wake up every day saying, God, what's on your heart for me today? And would you, and it doesn't give me a list. People say, oh, what does he say to you? That doesn't say anything to me. What I do in the morning is I try to tune my heart to his. So as I go through my day, there'll be things come my way that I'll say, yeah, that sounds like him. And there's things that come my way that say, yeah, it doesn't sound like, even though it's, man, this is great. It could be fun. This would be a great trip. It'd be a great opportunity. And I just, the breath of the Father isn't on it. And I can't tell people how I know that other than it's just a sense in my heart. And I don't always get that right, but I've learned to trust that sense, even if it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, even if I'd rather go with that and say, oh gosh, you know, I probably missed something there later than I would to violate it and grab for something that then, you know, isn't what he has in mind. So
I think even part of that's the humility of the journey of being able to go on to it again without the fear of failure, saying, oh, well, maybe I misunderstood you here, Lord, or maybe I stepped out too far in this, but that's okay. Where are we at now, Lord? Like, what's the next, like, what do you have for me today? Instead of this angst of, oh, well, I didn't hear you perfectly. And so now I failed. And so now I can't trust my heart. And then going down that trail that completely cuts out the relationship that God's been building.
Yeah, there
disarms it.
There is nothing in my heart anymore that even thinks that I will get God's thoughts perfectly about anything. I've been disabused of that. There have been seasons where I thought, oh man, I'm hearing God and this is great. And there are times where I get pretty clearer glimpses of God, but most of the time, it's I think this is him more than I think it's not. So I'm going to lean into that space, and I don't ever mind going, yeah, I got that wrong. You know, I thought something was going to happen there that didn't. And I, you know, even the disappointment over the city.
Yeah.
I think God had something there. It went away. So I could have been wrong. I wouldn't mind saying, yeah, I might've got that totally wrong. And yet I see so many things that were fruitful because of it that I go, okay, well, maybe God did have his hand in that. And I'm okay either way. If it's turned out, yeah, you shouldn't have even got involved there. Okay. Yeah. But best I knew, there's some fruit of it in my life that I really appreciate. There's a story I can't share with the world that kills me at times. But I hope that changes someday. I don't know. I don't know the door's ever closed on things God does. So
yeah,
could it come back? Yeah, it could back. It may never come back. But I've learned to enjoy the adventure of that. Instead of, boy, I've got to have this plan. It's got to be certain. If God doesn't come through, then I've got to feel bad. I just don't. I'm just saying I love the mystery that God is so much bigger than me. And on my best day, I'm not going to figure him out. So the best hope I have is just following the nudge today. So, you know, I don't get all the light there is to get so I can make a reasoned decision. I get enough light from him to make a next step. And sometimes I get that wrong. Sometimes, oh, that was a mirage. That wasn't a rock in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
It was a whitewater rapid that's now sweeping me away. But the idea is that God doesn't leave you on the rock going, oh, God, now you got to find your way back here. He jumps in the rapids with us. Okay, now we're in this together. Do I have a way to save you from this? I do. Do I have a way to take you back to what I call? I do. God has an unlimited number of ways to do what he does. We just got to be disabused of the outcome we want enough to see where he's leading us. And I think that's the hard part, particularly in a culture that keeps, I see this, and I want to choke people. I see it in the world a lot. I see it in Christianity too. I see it in the world a lot. You know, some kid becomes a successful tennis player, basketball player, whatever. And this just proves you can set your heart. And if you dream it, you can have it. And I go, what a crock of bull. I mean, that's the biggest lie because you're one of 1/1,000,000% that gets to do what you do. And you have gifts and talent and whatever, or an opportunity or a freaky coincidence or whatever, to say everybody can have what they want if they just dream it enough is just the biggest lie. and I hate it.
And it's, I am with you on that. As a guidance counselor, helping teens prepare to move into what it is that they want to do with their life and career and life aspirations. Oh man, I come up against that so much. And it just sickens me so much because it's like, I know how disheartening it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was this one student that had a dream, and we'll just say that educationally, they didn't have the ability to be able to achieve the scores that they wanted to achieve. I mean, it would have been a massive jump to go from where they were currently at to what they had aspired to be.
Well, if they had money, they just hire that guy from LA. He'll come and take your SAT for you.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. They'll get him in and it'll be perfect. You know, that's as long as you've got a couple $100,000, it'll be fine in the right context. But,
right.
But yeah, you know, just but these young people going through such angst because that's been the stereotype that they're supposed to gauge their lives off of.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh yeah, you know, we've got these YouTube stars that all started doing just
reviews on toys
on toys. Yeah. It just completely random.
And they're making six figures at 12 years old. Yeah.
Yeah, just this ridiculous stuff. And yet those outliers are what we as a culture are saying, no, that's what you have to aspire to. Now, yes, it is a marginal fraction of a percent of the population that ever will experience that. And then if you go and talk to that marginal fraction of percent, how many of them are actually happy and satisfied and living in joy in their life?
Yeah.
You know, I think that would even be smaller. And yet that's the standard that all these young people are trying to measure their lives against. And it, you just see it tearing them apart. And that's why I think a lot of them are disengaging.
Yeah.
And they're saying, no, I'm just going to live in the dream of social media, and I'm going to video game. And not that those things are bad, but that's where they escape to.
Yeah.
Because trying to aspire to this standard that's been set for them is next to impossible. And yet that's the aspiration they're supposed to live up to.
That to me, the brilliance of what happened in the garden, I know we talk about it as a curse or whatever, but God in our failure saying, you know, if you don't work, you won't eat, or, you know, by the sweat of your brow. What we continually know is that the indulgent lifestyle in a fleshly body never inures to someone's blessing. We all aspire to that, right? I'd love to have enough money.
Oh,
I can just do whatever I want. And yet the people who have enough money to do whatever they want, like you said, they're not always fulfilled and happy people. They're just not, because we weren't made for indulgence. There's something about work, and there's something about if you have a dream, and I wouldn't take anybody's dream away. If you have a dream of some gift you have or something you want to put in the world, dream it, pursue it, but pursue it wisely. Don't pursue it like I'm putting all my eggs in that basket. If you want to be a singer or songwriter, write music, find ways to put that in front of people that matter. But like I tell people these days that want to go into ministry, you want to go into ministry, double major in something, get a degree in biblical studies, whatever, get a degree in counseling or business or whatever. So you have options. Or same thing about acting or whatever, double major. So you can learn acting, learn as a craft, but have something to fall back on, because a very few small percentage are going to get to do what you want to do. You may turn out to be one of those. Great. Yeah. But if not, like most ministers, once they want to get out of the ministry, they don't have anything to fall back on. They feel like they don't.
Yeah.
They almost always do have skills that can be reinterpreted in a more private business
absolutely.
Context. But if you have a second degree, then you never have to feel stuck in anything, because I can move. I can, that's what I tell people, you know, have your dream, pursue it, just pursue it wisely. Like Sarah and I did, if this doesn't work out, we're going to do something else. We're not going to starve. We're not going to lose our house. We're not going to do those things unless God wants those things, and they'll have another way for us to go. But we're not going to lose it out of our own irresponsibility. And I know many people who had a vision for me, who want to live like I live. And they say, well, come and trust God to provide for me. And then 2 or 3 months later, they're losing their house. And they're saying, Wayne, I did what you told me to do. And I'm going, listen, I'm not even doing what I told me to do. As best I understand, I'm doing what God told me to do. And the proof of that is in the provision. If it's not being provided for, then God has something else for me to do. And it, and other people for me to be with in other contexts. And I've watched you guys do that, like you said, moving to Wyoming and things. You're not doing what you moved to Wyoming to do, exactly?
Not at all.
And then you guys, you know, frustrate over the fact that you weren't seemingly going to be able to have children. So you start doing some foster. You start opening other doors in your life. Then suddenly she's pregnant at a time when, okay, that's surprising. But now we're wouldn't it be easier instead of, I need the script for that when I'm 18. I need to know it's going to be mid-30s before we get pregnant. And then, no, we don't. We just need the freedom to follow him today. And maybe we're not, because I remember talking to you guys about maybe we'll never have children of our own. And you guys dealt with that, okay? And then turn the child, well, you didn't need to deal with that. But it's come late enough in life where it looked like that might be.
Yeah.
And if we have the freedom to roll through life like that, then I think it's easier to hear and follow God. It's difficult when life doesn't turn out the way we want, and then we go down into that pit of despair, and then we're angry. Why wouldn't we? It's all I ever wanted was children. I'm not having children. It's all right. None of that helps us follow God. And none of it gets the outcome we want anyway. So we might as well just learn to relax in a Father who cares for us. If my dream is disappointed, God will have a better dream. God will have something else. And it not necessarily wants all of us, you know, to be at the top 1/10 of 1% of whatever dream we hold. That's just not true.
And I think the interesting part, Jess and I were actually just reflecting on that. And it was really fun because as we were looking back on it, it's like, wow, we actually were able to live that. You know, Jess had the opportunity to move more towards that 1% in the acting world, and yet she chose not to because she wasn't willing to compromise her character. Yeah. And from age 13, she's told she's not going to be able to have kids, and so then she's stressing over that. You know, and yet we moved to Wyoming, and all of a sudden we have one kid living with us, and then we've got another one on the way. And it's like, man, like it's nothing short of adventure. You know, just the fun of that. And because if we had that script and, well, you know, Jess, you're going to marry this random rancher dude from Wyoming and he's going to be in L.A. and then he's going to whisk you off into a small town in the middle of nowhere. But that's where you're going to actually get pregnant and have your own baby, you know, like.
Yeah. And that's where
that would be boring.
Yeah, it would be. And it would be anticlimactic. And if we just rest in the unfolding reality of God's will, he loves us enough to let it unfold. He didn't say give us everything months in advance or years in advance. He just said there's grace enough for today. So wake up today. Do I have grace enough to get through this need, this sickness, this business opportunity, this whatever? And if we can live it, rest there, that's where I think it's easier to see the nudges. When our agenda is so strong or our frustration so strong, it just crowds out whatever breath of the Spirit would flow across our heart. So I know we're running way over time. We're going to tick off some people who have to get off the train in 41 minutes. Great to see you again, Kyle. We'll get you back on another time. And looking forward to getting this book out with you guys come November.
Absolutely. Excited to see it be able to be out into the world.
So that'll be one thing. And then your baby out in the world in December will be another great moment.
Yeah. Well, they'll be roughly about 4 weeks apart.
Yeah, I know. Could be fun.
Always. It will be an adventure.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.